You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here with Jason Pat. We're not talking about Russell Westbrook going to the Bulls, Jason, because Russell Westbrook just got traded to the Houston Rockets.
Absolutely wild. Reuniting with James Harden. How about that? Then all the reporting of the last couple days was like, oh, Westbrook to Miami. And he liked some picture on Instagram. And I think Brian Windhorst claimed that the Heat were on top of his short list. And now he's going to the Rockets. To play with James Harden again, kind of a funny story. I was in Target when this trade went down, when the Woj bomb came across. I was at Target today, just picking up some stuff after the gym, and I saw a dude that looked exactly like James Harden. I don't think it actually was James Harden, because I don't know why the hell James Harden would be in a Lakeview Target by himself buying. I couldn't even tell what about, but the dude looked just like him, had the same beard. He was tall, looked like him in the face. Like, it was kind of fucking crazy. And then I just looked at my phone while, like, I was gawking at this guy thinking it was James Harden and Russell Westbrook to the Rockets. Yeah, there was kind of a lot of stuff just kind of on Bulls Twitter in the last couple days. Once there was the Paul George bomb and he was gone, and once we found out that Russell Westbrook was angling to get out of Oklahoma City, like, should the Bulls trade for Russell Westbrook? Obviously, they can't do it now, but, I mean, there was a lot of conversation. Russ is very... very polarizing. He's always been polarizing, and this past season was one of his worst seasons in a long time. He's 30 years old. He's got a lot of miles on him. The way he plays, you don't know how he'll age. Like, although that, okay, so the trade has happened. The Bulls are not trading for him. John Paxson basically said this morning as well that they weren't going to do it. I still think, let's talk about a little the possibility of, should the Bulls have put more of an effort into getting Russell Westbrook? I kind of back and forth on it. I see it both ways. I understand Russell Westbrook still is a very good player, even if he had a down season. I know he was injured a bit. I think he had some surgeries at the end of the year to, I think, fix some of that stuff. He's, like I said, he's 30. He's been around a while, but that's still not that old. Like, he still averaged a triple-double for a third straight season, while some of that is just pure volume and stat padding kind of stuff. I mean, he's still a really good player. The Thunder were a good team, although they flamed out again. What would you just, I guess, if the Bulls were actually going after him, like, what would you have given up if he was available for the Bulls?
Man, I just want to talk about Westbrook on the Rockets right now, man. Like, what are your initial thoughts on that trade? Because to me, it's like there was so much crazy action throughout the NBA offseason. I felt like Daryl Morey just was going to do something, right? Like, no way was Morey going to be quiet while everyone else was making moves around him. And the Rockets, just with the idea of the Rockets like running it back, it just didn't feel right to me. I thought they would make some kind of move. This one's totally crazy. I mean, my initial reaction to it is that I don't know if they're going to be better. Like, to me, Westbrook provides no value playing off the ball, and Harden's main value is playing on the ball. We know Harden's so brilliant in the pick and roll, in isolation. Westbrook's not spacing the floor for Harden the way CP3 was. CP3 was much better as a catch-and-shoot guy. Westbrook is really just going to take the ball out of Harden's hands, and when Westbrook does have the ball, we know he's going to make a lot of questionable decisions. He's still a really productive player, a good player, but I have sort of no idea what Houston is thinking with this trade, especially giving up two future draft picks. The 2024 pick is only protected 1-4, I think, so... just a totally wild trade, and Daryl Morey couldn't help himself. I think that's my main takeaway, and I saw some people speculating on Twitter, you know, Morey might be gone by the time Westbrook's contract comes up in Houston. Maybe Morey's already thinking about his next move. I know he's had some battles there with their new owner over spending money. So in terms of Westbrook to the Bulls, though, I didn't love the idea just because I feel like acquiring Westbrook at this point in his career really puts a hard cap, a hard ceiling on like how good a team can be. Obviously, Houston's thinking we're going to win the championship this year. It's totally wide open for Houston heading into this season. Houston would have been really good even without Westbrook.
Right.
So I think that, you know, that was sort of their thinking, that they're going all in for a championship right now. It didn't make any sense for the Bulls, in my opinion, because, you know, there was just no clear path towards being an upper echelon team. I guess the one thing that could have happened is that Westbrook could have recruited people to Chicago, since that's the way the league works now and really the way the league's worked for the last 10 years. To me, that was the main point in favor of acquiring Westbrook. Maybe he's got some buddies around the league and he can bring them in, but I didn't really love the idea of trading for Westbrook for the Bulls. You could make an easy argument that trading LaVine, Felicio, and Dunn would have been a beneficial trade, and it would have opened up a lot of opportunities for Markkanen and Carter playing with Westbrook. But I just think his contract is too hefty given the production value he adds at this point in his career. And I never loved the idea of trading for Westbrook.
Yeah, like I said, I could have like been talked into it either way. Like, I think the trade that like ESPN came up with, it was kind of what you just said. It was like LaVine, Dunn, Felicio, and then like it was like a protected first rounder that would have like protected like next year, and then like another protection, like Lowry protected next year, and then like protected again the next year, and then like unprotected the year after that, something like that. Like, I probably could have been talked into it. Like, I mean, Dunn and Felicio are nothing, like one draft pick, whatever. Like, I guess the question is there, like, how much do you value Zach LaVine? Like, because there's certainly an argument to be made, like, if you're high on LaVine, and I guess I've been talking him up this summer. Like, there's an argument to be made that, like, in the next 2 to 3 years, probably, that LaVine will be better than Westbrook. I guess that's not guaranteed. I mean, Westbrook is clearly probably on the decline a little bit, even if he's still really good. LaVine still seemingly on the upswing. He's been putting in a lot of work. I know there was an article out on Bulls.com talking about how he's again talking about how he's going to get better at defense and all that stuff. So, I mean, like I said, I could have, if they would have pulled it off, I think I would have applauded the boldness of it. I could have been talked into it. Like, Russ is still a very exciting player. He'd have, like, I think it'd be interesting to see him with the rest of this roster, with all the shooting that they have, with Lowry, with Otto Porter Jr. Like, you really could have talked me into it. On the other hand, I totally understand why they didn't want to do it. Like I said, Paxson was on The Score this morning, basically saying like it just doesn't really fit our timeline, where we're at this point in terms of where we're in terms of competing. And I get that as well. Like, you don't want to give up that much in general. You don't want to give up a guy like Zach LaVine. I think that's totally fine with where the Bulls are at. So like I said, I kind of see both sides of it. Part of me was hoping that they would have at least maybe looked into it a bit more. I think it would have been fun maybe even to be involved in any, like, legitimately involved in the rumors. But yeah, I mean, whatever. It's not definitely going to happen. Now, back to your point about the Rockets and talk like kind of the desperation point. I'm honestly not sure if this was totally Morey's doing. It sounds like Russ did want to go to the Rockets, so like the Thunder were trying to help facilitate that. But then there was a quote in the ESPN article that was out today on the trade from the Rockets owner, Tillman Fertitta. You brought him up. There was some issues with like the luxury tax and all that. But he said, "I said at the end of the year, we're never going to stand pat. We're always going to try to get better. I think this makes us a better team. I hate to lose Chris Paul, but we felt like what we had to do to become a better team. I think it'll be very interesting and fun. James and Russell wanted to play together. It ought to be fun this year." Part of me also thinks that this might have been the owner just being like, fuck it. Like, we need to do something here after what's happened in the last couple years. And I know there's one of the big things people talk about these days is like ownership is the biggest like competitive advantage in the NBA. And it seems like the Rockets owner is kind of out of his mind, kind of crazy. And like, I think like this quote just kind of is like, he's just saying like fucking YOLO, whatever. Like, they wanted this to happen. We're just going to make it happen. And I know there were also the reports about Chris Paul and Harden hating each other, how much, and like that Chris Paul asked for a trade. Some of that was kind of walked back by the reporting. I do wonder how the relationship was actually there. I in general, I just kind of love this trade. Like, it's going to be absolutely chaotic, fucking crazy. And just after the chaos of the first week of free agency, like, I'm all for it, man. This free agency has been probably one of the craziest that I can remember.
Yeah, it feels like a new league, really. Like, someone just hit shuffle on the league. And yeah, really, the way the NBA works today, it's like 2K. When I'm trying to make a trade on Dynasty Mode in 2K. I'm just loading up future first-round picks until they finally say yes. That's the way the league works now. We saw it with the Anthony Davis trade to the Lakers. We saw it with the Paul George trade to the Clippers. And now here's the Rockets trading CP3, who might be better than Russell Westbrook. I think that the jury's sort of still out on which of those players can be more effective next year. But to trade two future first-round draft picks and two future swaps in the other years, just totally wild. The league's going to be so much fun this year. And, you know, to circle back to the Bulls, it's like what the Bulls are doing now is like hoarding all of their guys. And it's basically like when a baseball team has a really good farm system and you see the projections for like 3 years from the future. Oh, we're going to have this guy in center field and this prospect in right field and this prospect at second base. No one does that anymore in the NBA. In the NBA, like, this is the win now era. If you have an opportunity or a lane to make a move, you do it. You will it into existence. The Bulls are just not operating on that level. And, you know, the Bulls obviously have different stakes attached to them right now. They're rebuilding. As soon as they made the move to trade Jimmy Butler to tear it down, we knew that this is the spot they were going to be in for a few years. Hopefully, after this free agency period, the Bulls are no longer going to be one of the worst teams in the league. I think they can still be in contention for a playoff spot, you know, if CP3 goes to Miami with Jimmy Butler. I think that they're certainly going to make the playoffs, and that then it's probably the Bulls, Detroit, and Orlando fighting for that last spot. But, you know, I think that this is something the Bulls should take note of. Just the way the league works, willing things into existence, you want to make a move, make it happen. This idea of just, like, hoarding draft picks and, like, penciling each player you've taken to be, you know, the future star at that position, man, it's just not the way it happens anymore.
Yeah, so I think that's a perfect transition into John Paxson went on The Score. I think he might have talked yesterday as well on the radio, but I saw some of the comments coming out of his little media rounds today on The Score this morning, and he was just kind of talking about just their whole, just where the Bulls are at right now. And actually, I didn't really mind some of the stuff he was saying. I feel like they kind of came out strong, almost with a playoff like expectation. All right. After the season over, like, I feel like he was talking a big game about how they want to take a big step forward. And I feel like he's kind of walking that back and maybe trying to put a little more realistic spin on where they're at. So let me pull up the quote, because they talked about Russell Westbrook. They asked him about it. He said, basically, we're not at that level yet. And there was a big quote here, just kind of asking where they're at right now. And he said, quote unquote, "We're looking at things realistically. We understand where we're at. Honestly, I just want our group to be competitive. I want our fan base to look at our team and say, okay, these guys are playing hard, showing us they care, and there's a real chance that if the young guys develop, this is going to be a real good basketball team. The league has changed so much." We've talked about that. It used to be sometimes you'd sign a guy to a 6-year deal, guaranteed deals, and there was limited movement. And then he just goes on to talk about just all the movement now in the roster. And they talk about, we're trying to build this thing on our timeline. Our timeline started 2 years ago. And you look at the number of changes we've made, like, there's significant changes, and he thinks they've upgraded the talent level. And I think a lot of it, what he says does ring true. I know a lot of it sounds lame. Like, I know there's fans that don't, like, aren't excited at all about what the free agent moves that they've made this offseason. Like, I get it. But, like, I don't know. I didn't really mind the stuff he was saying this morning. Like, I think that is a more realistic view of it. Like, they're not really that ready to compete right now. They do have to take a step forward to being just okay before they're actually really good. I don't know if you heard any of that this morning or what you think of any of those comments that I just read there. But I think in general, like, usually, because a lot of times when Paxson talks, I'm usually like rolling my eyes, scoffing at what he's saying. But like, I found myself just kind of saying like, yeah, that's kind of right. And there was another quote that I retweeted this morning. It just says, "We basically just have to get competitive again, and that's where we have to start." And I said this on the last pod when we were talking about the free agent signings. Like, the Bulls have to get mediocre first before they can actually be good. Like, they're not going to go from absolute dog shit to being like a 50, 60 win team. Like, it doesn't work like that, especially with the way that they're building. They have to be a competitive team first. So honestly, I kind of was totally okay with all the stuff he was saying today.
Yeah, the one thing that stuck out to me is the line where Paxson was like, "If our young players come through with their end of the bargain, we're going to be a good team and we're going to be in position." It's like Paxson's always doing this bullshit. He's always blaming everyone but himself. Right now already, he's like, "Well, I did my job. Now it's up to Lauri Markkanen to become a superstar. And if he doesn't, well, not my fault. We put them in the best position to succeed and they failed. It's like, Paxton, it is your fault, dude. Like, we can praise the Bulls for making these good moves at the ground floor to, like, you know, get them back into respectability. But at the same time, you look at the current core right now, and there's just no pathway to being a really good team, an actual contender in the NBA. The Bulls are still basically a joke. They're measuring themselves only against the Pistons and the Magic for the 8th seed. And Paxton loves this shit. The fact that, you know, they can possibly sneak into the 8th seed this year, I think that he would consider that a major success. You can already see him, you know, a year from now on the radio spewing a stat about how the Bulls have made the playoffs in the Eastern Conference over the last 15 years more than any other franchise or some other bullshit. They have to be held to a different standard. Like, it's good that they made some smart free agent signings. I'm glad they did it. While doing that, they also likely took themselves out of the running to draft a superstar, right? So now it's on Paxton to either trade for a superstar or to sign a superstar. Well, Paxton has failed miserably at doing this, Jason, for the last 15 years. So while we are patting the Bulls on the back and we are being complimentary of the moves they've made this summer, it's like they have so much more fucking work to do. They are not even close to being in a spot where they're an actual contender and where a legit superstar would consider signing with them in free agency. The most likely scenario, Jason, is that in 2021, Giannis will do something, Kawhi and Paul George will do something, and the Bulls will sign the equivalent of Carlos Boozer. That's just what I'm going to believe until I see something different. So, you know, Paxton can say that we're not in a spot right now to make a bold move, a dynamic move. Well, Paxton loves being in this spot. Paxton loves the 8th seed. Paxton loves, you know, maybe trying to sneak up in the future, but not really having any pressure to do it right now. Even as I praise the Bulls over the last week or two, it's just still so frustrating the way this franchise consistently treats itself as, you know, a mid-market player or as a team that really isn't striving to compete for championships.
Yeah, I think to that point, like this whole approaching this free agency as like basically we don't have any chance at these guys, like definitely that was disappointing. You mentioned the 2021 thing, and Paxton did kind of reference that as well this morning. Here's a quote. You want the superstars. You want to do what the Clippers or Lakers doing. He adds that that's not where the Bulls realistic are now. This was from this just the Score Twitter account, but they could be in 2 years. And there's the 2 years thing. There's the hashtag 2021 plan, I feel like, is definitely what they're selling right now. And we had that in 2010. We had that in 2014. We might have had that in 2016 as well. So now it's the hashtag 2021 plan. You mentioned Giannis. You mentioned Kawhi and Paul George. I mean, right now there's really no reason to expect that plan to actually work out that way. I know there's going to be a ton of other possible free agents on the market. Like, I think, like, depending on if they stay with their teams, like Oladipo, CJ McCollum, like Blake Griffin, just like a whole bunch of names there. Like, so, like, first of all, I do think, like, where they're kind of at and like with their young guys, and they got Otto Porter there, his money will come off the books. They did with these signings with Thaddeus Young, his contract is $6 million guaranteed for 2021. Satoransky, $5 million guaranteed. So they're keeping that flexibility open, which I think is fine. If this is the way they're going to go about it with this young core, they definitely should, I feel like, at least play to be in that position for 2021. Again, there's no reason to think that the Bulls will actually sign one of those guys because they just have never done it. So, like, playing the free agent game has never really worked out for them that great. But they also can't approach 2021 where, like, they don't make – like, they're not aggressive with other moves, or they don't make other moves. Like maybe even – I know next offseason is supposed to be shitty in terms of free agency. Like, don't go out and overpay some – like, I don't even know who's on the market, but it's, like, nobody. But if there's a move that comes up, whether it's a trade in the next year or two or some other type of move, and they don't do it just because they're totally banking on 2021, I feel like that'd be a huge mistake. You can't just bank on free agency and – everything coming together for you perfectly. Like, you have to be ready to make moves and be aggressive. And it's something we really haven't seen the Bulls do all that often. Paxton says that they weren't in a position to get a guy like Russell Westbrook now. Fine, whatever. We talked about it. We understand that a bit. But if there's another star that comes available in the next year or two, I feel like they have the asset. I mean, they have intriguing young players. They have, I think, most of their picks. I really hope that they're not just waiting for 2021, and I hope that if there is another star that comes on the market in the next year or two, that they actually do put forth an offer and actually act like a big boy franchise to supplement the other young guys. Like, they don't have to trade everybody. Like, they have a decent amount of young pieces. Like, so I hope they stay aggressive and on the trade market if something comes up. Because you, like I said, you don't want to just bank on the free agency plan like has happened in years past.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's like they have these young guys now whose value is, quite frankly, going to diminish if they don't improve. Like, Markkanen now, right now, at the start of the season, probably has a decently high trade value with two seasons left on his rookie deal. But what if he again shows he can't be durable for a full season? What if he, you know, doesn't make improvements in his game and continues to mostly be a one-dimensional scorer? Well, then, you know, he's not going to have the same value anymore. And the Bulls' plan of their young guys improving to such a level that it attracts free agents to them just isn't going to work out. So for me, I would seriously consider making a trade. I mean, you've ripped off Washington twice already for Otto Porter Jr. and Thomas Satoransky. Why not try to get Bradley Beal in here? If you could move LaVine and some other combination of assets, Kobe White, trade him, you know, I think that could be intriguing. And White in particular, I'm not just saying this because he struggled during summer league, but he is someone who to me projects to have pretty good trade value over the next few years moving forward. He's tall, he can shoot, he's young, he has the pedigree of a top 10 pick. So these are all things that typically increase a player's trade value. So what I was going back to saying before about how, you know, the league just, it's not about penciling guys into positions 3-4 years down the line anymore. That's just a totally backwards way of thinking. The Bulls should not be doing that. Like, if they can move Markkanen and get a star, they should do it. If they think that star can recruit another star. If they can trade Kobe White, they can go for it. So they should go for it. So I don't know. I just don't have a lot of faith that the Bulls have any upward mobility in this rebuild. Like, the spot they're at right now, which is like just good enough to make the playoffs and scrappy and tough, and that's what Paxson loves, man. Like, this is the perfect Paxson position.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, he did kind of acknowledge, like, that quote I read, part of that quote, I feel like he did acknowledge just like how the league is changing with all this player movement. And I guess you just have to hope that they do jump on that, and then they realize they just can't sit around. If the Bulls like don't take that step forward next season, I feel like they have to. I mean, first of all, if they bomb next season, like, they should blow up everything. Like, Paxson should fire himself, or they should fire him. Gar should be gone. They should make big trades. Like, I feel like this season is going to be huge, because if they don't take a step forward at all, like, I think there needs to be a reckoning throughout the entire organization, because they need to just make some type of move there. But that's down the line. But yeah, I mean, you just hope that with the way the league is going, with players taking so much control and all the power that they have now, it's all about the players, and they need to have players who are good and have players who are like friends with other players and who are willing to bring other guys there. So it will be interesting to see where, if the Bulls can not only get to a mediocre level, which, like I said, they need to get there first, but if they can get to that next level. And I don't know, like, I don't know if I, because we just haven't, like, we still just don't know what these young guys, like, they look good, there is potential there. Like, we like some of these guys, but like, they still have to prove it. Like, I have guys, like, people like angry in my mentions when I say, like, I tweeted out, like, Zach Lowe called the Bulls a winner this offseason. And we agree. We talked about how great their free agency was, but then he talked about how like LaVine still has to prove that he's not just like an empty calorie scorer. Lowry, like, he looks great and all, but like, he still has to actually like have the actual production and contributions to a winning team. And like, I had a bunch of people mad in my mentions, like, LaVine's better than an empty calorie scorer, like, blah, 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 blah. It's like, dude, these guys haven't done shit. Like, they have a lot to prove still to not only just make the playoffs, but to actually be a championship. Like, just think about just, there's a huge gap between where the Bulls were last year and even being in the playoffs. Then there's another huge gap to being like a possible title contender. The Bulls have so far still to go, and probably so many other moves that they might have to make. Like, there's still just a long way to go. And like, the Bulls do have to have some patience, but like, they can't just kind of totally sit around and wait on everything. Like, they're going to have to make some moves either way, no matter what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the 2021 plan, what is going to be different about that than all the other 2 years from now plans the Bulls have had over the past 20 seasons, right? So color me a little bit skeptical, but I am excited for this year. I think that the Bulls' young guys are going to have a lot of pressure on themselves. I think Markkanen has more pressure on himself than any other player on the Bulls. Because, you know, right now you look at his numbers, the guy's averaging under 2 assists per 36 minutes, under 1 block, under 1 steal. He's scoring well, but only at average efficiencies, hitting 55% on his true shooting percentage, 36% from three. So it's like, what can Markkanen do to take the next step? He can either become a lot better as a passer and as a playmaker. Obviously, if you're going to be this go-to scorer, you need to leverage the threat of your own scoring ability to make your teammates better. He hasn't done that at all yet. Or the other thing he could do is just become really, really good at three-point shooting. If he's hitting, 43% instead of 36%, suddenly he's a lot more efficient as a scorer. So these are the factors that are really going to determine how good the Bulls are, not just this year, but into the future. But Paxson coming out and already being like, well, I did my job. I got Markkanen and Carter. And if they're looking good, that we know that they're going to attract star-level free agents. It's just such broken logic to me. And it just seems destined to fail, man. And really the one way that the Bulls have shown their ability to build a contender is through the draft. Like, they literally need the first pick in a year when it's a no-brainer who to take. I know someone's going to tweet at me, oh, Michael Beasley was the projected number one in 2008, according to some people. Well, sure. But they're not going to get that first pick anymore, most likely, Jason, unless, I don't know, they get injured a lot again and they somehow jump up the lottery standings the way the Pelicans did this year. So they did okay, but they just have so far to go, man.
Yeah, they definitely do. Before, the Bulls have been playing Summer League in Las Vegas. Let's transition to that. But before we do that, let's take a word from our sponsor. When you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. And that's why you need ShipStation.com. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. No matter where you're selling, Amazon, Etsy, or your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly, save money on shipping costs, and keep your customers happy. And right now, Blue Wire listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use promo code BLUE. There's absolutely no risk, and you can start your free trial without even entering your credit card info. ShipStation works with all the major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, and even Amazon Fulfillment. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. So no wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time and with the best rates available. Just visit ShipStation.com and click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in BLUE. That's ShipStation.com and then enter that promo code BLUE. ShipStation.com. Make ship happen. All right, and we're back. So, Summer League, Vegas. Summer League's always, I guess, somewhat entertaining. Occasionally, it's also can be absolutely awful basketball. The most recent Bulls game that they pulled out in the end, it was absolutely hideous basketball game. Bulls Hornets, the Bulls were losing most of the game. Terrible shooting percentages for both teams. But obviously, there's always caveats for Summer League because it's just a lot of the times the teams are bums. A lot of guys that are fighting for teams, rookies making their first quote unquote NBA appearances. Just it can be kind of a hot mess. The Bulls, notable players with the Bulls, like Coby White, obviously, Daniel Gafford, their two draft picks, and then Chandler Hutchinson's been playing, and then their two-way player, Adam Mokoka, has been playing. The rest of the roster, I feel like we just don't really give a shit about. I know Shaq Harrison was actually waived. The Bulls waived him. I know he played in, like, the first game or two of Summer League. He was waived. We'll see if they bring him back and maybe on, like, a two-way contract if he doesn't get another contract. And then Walter Lemon Jr. was also waived, but he's been on the team as well. But basically those first three guys, Coby White, Daniel Gafford, Chandler Hutchinson. I did not see the first couple games, but I watched pretty closely the last couple games. What I've seen out of Coby White, I mean, one thing that sticks out to you, obviously, the three-point percentage has been absolutely atrocious. I think he misses first like 11 or 12 three-pointers, 3 of 26 in 4 games. Really hasn't been that close on a lot of his threes as well. And I think a lot of it is probably due to the shot selection. A lot of step back threes, pull up threes, and some pull up threes in like transition. So just kind of not the best shot selection that you're going to take. We've kind of seen a lot of that at Coby White. So just in general, like his shooting, and I think is at something like 35-36%. Just hasn't been the most efficient player. And I feel like what I've seen of him just hasn't really been that surprising. I think I said last have said recently that I feel like I don't think Kobe White's going to be any good as a rookie. Like, I feel like it's going to take a lot of time. Paxson said during his radio bit today that they're going to ease him along slowly. Like, obviously, he'll probably compete for the starting job in camp, but, like, I don't think he'll win it. Like, even if Chris Dunn is gone, like, Satoransky, I would assume, will probably be the starting point guard. I guess to that point, real quick, Jim Boylan came out and said that Chris Dunn's going to be the starting point guard. He said that we got our first five, Chris Dunn starting point guard. From what I can tell, that's kind of nonsense, and it was Boylan just kind of being diplomatic. I know Casey Johnson and some of the other beat guys, Cody Westbrook on the basis, said, yeah, like, I think Boylan is just being nice to Dunn. Sounds like Satoransky, if Dunn's around, Kobe White will fight for the starting role. Other things I saw from Kobe White, I feel like he had some struggles finishing in the paint against length. I did see some of the good stuff in transition. He had some really nifty ball handling, some nifty passing in transition. In half court, it did seem like a bit of a struggle finishing against bigger players at the rim. It just wasn't all that pretty. I know he did get to the line pretty nicely in a couple of the games. Seen some of the passing. I thought defensively he was pretty all right as well. Made some plays on defense. Ricky, I don't know how much any highlights you've seen, how many of the games you've seen. And what I've said, does that kind of match up with Kobe White? I know, like, in college, like, his shooting percentages weren't that great because in terms of, like, his pull-up shooting, step-back shooting, not the best. Wasn't always known for taking the best shots. And that kind of – that I feel like that kind of lines up with what I've seen here, that and just kind of struggling finishing at the basket.
Yeah, let's talk about the positives and negatives and just his situation going forward with the Bulls this season and into the future. So I think the positives he's shown – the man is a one-man fast break, right? Like, the Bulls have been pleading with their guards to play with pace for years now. I remember Hoiberg telling D. Rose that he had to get it across by the 21-second mark back when Rose used to walk it up during his last year in Chicago. So that's not going to be a problem anymore with Kobe White on the floor. He has his pedal to the floor every single time he touches the ball, and I think that's going to have a major impact on the rest of the roster. This is a young team with guys who want to run. LaVine's going to be at his best in transition. Markkanen being able to run the floor and hopefully hit some transition threes. Carter's going to be able to get up and down. So I think that's the one thing he'll bring to the table right away, is when Kobe White's in the game, the team is going to play at a much faster tempo than they do when he's not in the game. I think that he did show some pretty crafty open floor ball handling ability. I mean, the thing Kobe White can do is create space off the dribble, right? He's a quick and shifty guard. He can go into his pull-ups very quickly. Now, none of his shots were falling. Like you said, 3 of 26 from three-point range. Hit 11% of his threes and 36% of his field goals. That's just atrocious to start summer league. This sort of matches how he was at North Carolina, too. He was only in the 27th percentile as a pull-up shooter at UNC as a freshman. If you looked at his clips, a lot of smart people believe that he had room to improve as a pull-up shooter. I certainly think he still does. Clearly, he does, but clearly, he's rough right now. And so he's going to have to learn to, like, corral that pace. It's one thing to play fast, but you also have to play under control. So that's going to be one of the biggest things for Kobe. I also thought that he was okay as a passer. I mean, you'll see clips going around online of him, like, locking into his first read in the pick and roll. He definitely has to see the floor better. But I think the fact that he likes to play the game in transition and semi-transition, I think the NBA in general is typically played more in transition and semi-transition than purely in the half court. Maybe in the playoffs it's purely in the half court. But in the regular season, Kobe should be able to find some ways to make the game easier on him just by getting out and running. And when that happens, I think he will be able to make some good decisions. Now, he's not going to be like a masterful pick and roll point guard in the half court. Hopefully that's an area where he can improve. But I thought that, you know, the shooting is obviously the biggest disappointment. The thing that I want to keep an eye on with him is the power he generates going to the rim on his drive. He just doesn't generate power the way that a player like Damian Lillard does, you know, where you can absorb contact at the rim and still finish. He just doesn't have that type of strength, doesn't have that type of explosiveness. So if that's the case, and if he's not going to be someone who's going to be finishing through contact at the rim, he's really, his whole value will be tied to how good he is as a pull-up shooter. And right now he's terrible as a pull-up shooter. So, you know, that sounds like a negative view of it, but I still think Kobe has a lot of outs to become a productive player. The thing is that You can play him at the two this year. He's going to have no pressure this year at all. Like, you can play him in so many different looks. You can play him with LaVine in the same time in the backcourt, or you can play him with Satoransky, or Archie Diakono is, you know, a guy who's getting back a point guard minutes. Play him with him. Like, you can ease his transition in so many different ways, and everything Coby White gives you this year, to me, is great. We've seen even players who haven't put up big numbers in their first couple of years, they still retain trade value.
Agreed.
So I think that this year is nice for him in that he has no pressure on him. No one's counting on him to be even a day one contributor on this team. And hopefully he can just grow into being a scoring NBA guard, and he can grow into the point guard role, because right now it's going to be a work in progress, but that's fine because the Bulls actually signed some good players this offseason. So Coby White will not really make that big of a difference on the team this year. That's my initial read on it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I will say, while his shooting, his three-point shooting was awful, he has had a decent amount of success with his pull-up and step-back mid-range shots, and it seems like he does a pretty nice job of getting separation on those pretty easily. Obviously, summer league, caveats apply, like against better defenders won't be as easy, but he was getting to his spots and like those mid-range shots. Obviously, we don't want him falling in love with those kind of shots. Not the best shots, and usually just in general, those aren't that efficient, but he was shooting those pretty well and getting some good looks on those in summer league. So that was definitely a positive. And like there
and that is important, I want to say, because remember Kemba Walker was the same way for like the first 6 years of his career. He was a great pull up mid-range shooter, but he couldn't pull up from three. Now that's all Kemba Walker does is pull up from three. So it's going to be a long career for Coby. I just wouldn't expect him to move the needle too much his rookie year. And I also think, you know, if they get in a position where they can get Bradley Beal or another superstar, I think that he's going to retain a lot of trade value.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And definitely saw some of the other good stuff as well. I mean, you saw the stuff in transition. I mean, The Ringer wrote an article calling him the most impressive lottery pick. That was the headline. Like, I would kind of disagree with that. I mean, Jackson Hayes has been ridiculous for the Pelicans. He was basically murdered somebody in the Bulls-Pelicans game. I'm sure you saw that dunk all over Twitter. And all the other lottery picks. This summer league has been kind of a huge dud because like Zion got hurt in the first game. Morant's not playing. Culver was held out. Who else? Like Barrett has been kind of fucking terrible. So like Coby was almost like one of the better ones by default, even though he's kind of struggled. But like I said, he has had his moments. There was my favorite play of his from the games that I saw, like in transition, he was got out and running. He did a little dipsy-do like behind the back pass to get to the basket separation and then found an open three-point shooter. The guy cashed a three-point shot. Like those kind of reads and that kind of niftiness in the open court was really impressive. And that's one of the big reasons why he went seven overall. That kind of playmaking and quickness in the open court to get those kind of looks for not only himself and others. It's pretty impressive play. Moving on, Daniel Gafford. Very impressive in general. He was a second-round pick. 38th overall, and in our post draft pod, we were just kind of like, you know, fine pick, like decent player. He was initially after his freshman year, he was possibly going to be a lottery pick. He went back to Arkansas, put up solid numbers, but just kind of, I guess, just didn't impress scouts enough, and he fell all the way to the second round. Probably been the Bulls' best player in summer league. In this last game, he put up a 20-10. It was like a +15. He's just kind of been all over the place on defense, just protecting the rim, blocking a ton of shots. I know his first game, like the first possession of summer league was a Coby White to Daniel Gafford alley-oop dunk. Was a really nice play. Nice read by Coby. Nice dive to the basket. And kind of what we've seen has been what was kind of expected out of Daniel Gafford. Just around the rim, absolute dominant, dunking all over everybody, blocking tons of shots. Just the activity level has been really impressive. I think it was the Pelicans game. While the Bulls got the ass beat by the Pelicans and Jackson Hayes was dunking on everybody and Nick Alexander-Walker was absolutely dominating that game on both ends. Gafford, I think, had like 6 blocks that game, so he made a little impact himself. Just in general, like he's just been really solid. Like I already am willing to put him in front of Cristiano Felicio in the rotation. Like obviously, when playing in the NBA will be different than playing in summer league, and the athleticism factor won't be as big of an advantage. But like the activity level's there, the length. I feel like just the timing and instincts of his defense and blocking shots. Like Felicio just doesn't really have that kind of rim protection ability. And I think just having that as a backup center would be really, really nice. If you can just block shots and rim run and get out and run when you have Coby White, Zach LaVine, and these other guys. Like I feel like Gafford in spot minutes as a rookie, maybe he will be able to make a little impact. Like I kind of assumed that he would just be a G League guy for most of the year And maybe he will be, since they do have Luke Kornet as well as a backup five. But, I mean, the way he was looking in Summer League, if he can translate any of that to the NBA, like, I think he can make an impact, and at least as maybe a fifth big even.
Yeah, it's a simple game for Daniel Gafford, I think. Yeah. Run and jump big. He's not really going to have any ball skill whatsoever. He's not going to put the ball on the floor.
Not at all.
He's not going to make any plays as a passer. Really, I think that that's a big hole in this game right now. He doesn't really pass the ball whatsoever. He's not going to shoot it from the outside either. So basically what he's going to do is set a hard screen at the top of the key, dive to the basket. Hopefully you hit him with the lob. Otherwise, he's able to find a crease inside the defense to lay the ball in. So that's going to be his offensive game. Defensively, I think he lacks the lateral quickness of a prospect like Jackson Hayes, who, oh my God, he's looked unbelievable so far for the Pelicans. I wouldn't be surprised now if he ends up being the second best player in this whole draft, right? Just after seeing the stretch in Summer League, we knew he had that type of freaky athleticism. In a league where everyone's moving faster and playing faster, it's like, this guy might be the fastest seven-footer I've ever seen. Just that agility and like the nimbleness of his feet. Gafford doesn't have that, but what Gafford does have is a stronger base defensively. He's not going to be pushed around the way that someone like Jackson Hayes is going to be. And I think that he'll probably be more productive as a rookie because of that. I think that Gafford can possibly give the Bulls some good minutes this year. I'm sure he's going to spend a lot of time in Hoffman Estates with the G League team, but Gafford to me was a high floor pick in the second round, and I do think that just based off his physicality and his tenacity that he should be able to carve out a little bit of a career for himself, which is more than you can say for some of the Bulls' other second round picks like Eric Murphy, Cameron Bairstow. We can go down the line. I have faith that Gafford's going to be a better player than those guys.
Yeah, I mean, he already looks just way better. Like I said, best player on the Summer League team, it seems like. And yeah, the Jackson Hayes thing, like, I did not know much about him. I know when we had John Wasserman on, he called him, I think he was at fifth on his big board. Like, I totally, and the Bulls were rumored to be interested. Like, I totally get it now. Just like the Bulls game was just like him and Nick Alexander Walker were just like far and away the best players in the court. Just the athleticism just popped off. Like, that was absolutely just an incredible showing. I think he showed up like the next game, him and Nick Alexander Walker again, just completely dominated. Like the Pelicans fucking murdered this draft. Like Zion was hurt the first game, and these last couple games, like Hayes and Nick Alexander Walker completely dominated. The Pelicans have won these games by like 20, 30 points. If that actually translated and they get Zion, Jackson Hayes, and Nick Alexander Walker out of this draft, like, fucking David Griffin is a goddamn magician. So kudos to them for that. Daniel Gafford, really solid. Been really impressed by him. I'm glad that he's shown really nicely. Moving on to the last, I guess, Bulls real player of interest. I guess real quick, Adam Akoka actually hit a few threes. I'm pretty sure when they signed him, they said he was a terrible shooter. But he hit a few threes. He's looked all right. Nothing too special. But on to the other, the last Bulls, I guess, real guy of interest here. That's Chandler Hutchinson. And he's looked fucking absolutely terrible, absolutely awful. I do want to give him some slack. He obviously missed basically the last half of last season. He had that weird toe injury, which was another like Bulls injury where it's like, oh, he'll be out a little bit. But, you know, I think it was one of those where like he'll be out like a month or two. Like we'll reevaluate him around the All-Star break. And then he ended up like missing the rest of the year, and it was like way worse than it was initially reported, and just real goofy stuff. So like, he has not played in a while. He's coming back from an injury. I get it. But like, Chandler Hutchinson's 23 years old. He was a 4-year college player, second year pro. Like, I was really hoping, even with the injury, I was really hoping to see more. And he's just really tough to watch in half court situations. We talk about Coby White getting out and running. Chandler Hutchinson's like only value offensively is getting out and running. Like, he looks really good, really athletic when he's getting out in transition. Nice alley-oop from Coby White. He had a few other plays in transition, nice finishes, but get him in the half court, and he spent like this entire summer like driving into the teeth of defense and throwing up just the ugliest fucking shots you'll ever see. Like a couple games ago, which was the first summer league game I watched, I think the first summer league game he played, the Bulls beat the Lakers, he was fine. But the game against the Pelicans with Jackson Hayes, just Hayes was just engulfing him. I think Hutchinson was the one who got blocked by Jackson Hayes' elbow when he was going up for a layup on the break. And just all these other times, just driving into the defense, throwing up ugly shots. his 3-point, his jump, just no threat from like beyond the arc at all. I think he's missed all of his, or most of his jumpers as well. So just like, just a really disappointing showing for him. And like, and the Bulls right now, when you look at their depth chart, like on the wing, it's LaVine and Porter. And then like, I mean, if they keep Dunn, I guess you can consider him a wing. Kobe White's kind of a wing, but more of a point guard. Chris Dunn as well. So like, I feel like they're going to be relying on important minutes for Hutchinson. And like right now, like I know he could still be a good defender. He is long, decently athletic, but like watching him play offense in the summer league has been really tough to watch. Just the amount of just shots around the rim that just don't even come close. Like it's been tough.
Yeah, I feel like that was totally a Gar pick, right? I just think that
the promise.
What?
The promise. They promised him at 22.
Right. Yeah, they promised him early. Gar has roots in the those conferences of college basketball. He has no shake to his game whatsoever. He's the most rudimentary straight line drive handle you'll ever see. And he's got no pull-up game and no catch-and-shoot game. So he looks like a basketball player when he walks into a room because he's 6'7", he's got broad shoulders and long arms, and he can run, but he really can't do anything else. So right now the Bulls are looking at Otto Porter as their three, their backup's Chandler Hutchinson. They have no one behind him. This Bulls season could be a disaster very quickly if Otto Porter, who is the Bulls' best player, gets hurt. And Hutchinson has to play a lot of minutes at the three. I don't know what they would do in a situation like that. They're totally ill-prepared for it. They'd probably make another move and find some patchwork guy to fill in. But, man, I'm just not high on Hutchinson right now. But prove me wrong, man, you know? Prove me wrong. He's only played a handful of games in the NBA, I guess, at this point. Didn't get a full season last year. What is he going to turn 24 years old this year? In April, he'll turn 24.
Yes.
So this is going to be his age 23 season. I would love to see improvement out of Chandler Hutchinson. I would love to see him be just a rotation piece, a seventh man, an eighth man.
Sure.
I think that would be really nice if the Bulls could get that out of Hutchinson. But it currently appears that he is a long way away from that because is a sophomore in the summer league at 23 years old. You should be a lot better than the type of numbers Hutchinson was putting up, shooting 29% from the field, shooting 12% from three. He averaged 13 points. He was actually good in his third and final game, I should say. But the first two were just a disaster. So, it's tough. It's like, He to me, has to make his impact as a defensive player first. Carve out your role in the defensive end. That's what Butler once did. And then he built his offensive skill set. Because right now, like, Hutchinson's not going to handle the ball. He's not really going to shoot it. He's not going to pass it. So what the hell does he do?
Yeah, I don't want to totally bury the guy. Like, I just don't – like, he still could have some value. Just, like, it's just been tough. And, like, even this third game, like, he put up pretty good numbers. He got to the line a bit. But a lot of it's just, again, those straight-line drives where, like, he was just kind of throwing the ball at the rim and, like, he was getting some contact. Like, against summer league players, that can work. In the NBA, if against better defenders, like, he just doesn't have it. So, like, have to hope he gets a little better, shake some of the rust off from this injury. Like I said, I don't want to totally bury the guy. But if there isn't that improvement and he's like only a decent like defensive player, and they said if Otto Porter gets hurt, we have Porter, we have Hutch, like Denzel, so that we can't rely on Denzel Valentine either. Like I feel like they need another wing, and like that's where the Chris Dunn, like I know they've been talking about Chris Dunn stuff. There was a rumor out there that Casey Johnson reported about possible sign and trade for bringing Justin Holiday back, which is like hilarious after the Bulls kind of fleeced the Grizzlies in that Justin Holiday trade last year. So, like, I mean, and Justin Holiday is, like, not even that good. Like, I guess I would be fine with that if they did that. But I don't think it's going to happen now because the Grizzlies just signed Tyus Jones to an offer sheet that the Timberwolves didn't match. So I don't think the Grizzlies really have much interest in Chris Dunn at this point anymore. But, like, I feel like they need another wing. And even if they don't trade Chris Dunn, Antonio Blakeney is still sitting there with, like, a minimum contract who doesn't give you anything. There's no reason for Blakeney to be on this roster. Wave Blakeney, go sign a veteran wing shooter. I would take – somebody brought up to me the other day, Vince Carter. Go try to sign Vince Carter. He can still play like 10, 15 minutes a game on the wing. Like obviously, you don't want to play him big minutes, but I feel like they need another body there. Because if Hutch is bad and Porter, if he gets hurt at all, like that could just – like you said, that could get real ugly on the wing there. Now, yeah, David Nwaba's out there. They bring him back. They need something else there. I don't – like. just get rid of Blakeney, try to find a trade for Dunn. And Paxton did admit it. Like, when I know, like, Boylan talked about Chris Dunn being part of the first five, and Paxton even said the other day when Casey asked him, like, about Chris Dunn's status, like, you know, like, if there's a chance where we can make a move, like, for help on the wing, like, we have to take advantage. Like, I feel like it still seems like the writing is on the wall with Chris Dunn, that he's not going to be here, that the Bulls are trying to make a move somehow. I just don't know where it's going to happen. But yeah, they need something else there on the wing, especially if Hutch isn't going to improve much. But like I said, I don't want to bury him in general or totally. Like, he's still second year in the league, got injured the first year. We'll see. Hopefully there's a lot, but hopefully that we see some legitimate improvement moving forward. Besides that, I think that's basically it. Like, we touched on those main three guys. Like, I think the Bulls might have another summer league game because they did not qualify for the tournament. I believe the top eight teams in Vegas qualified for the tournament, but I believe that they do get like a consolation game. So I think there might be one more game. I'm not honestly totally sure. I was trying to find this out earlier. It would be nice to see these guys play one more game, see if they can go out on another solid note. I know they're coming off a win, but the last game was kind of ugly in terms of the shooting. But in general, like, I feel like Kobe White's been up and down, some nice stuff, basically what I expected. Gafford's been good. Hutch has been bad. So, I mean, just kind of normal summer league stuff. Remember, as always, all summer league caveats apply. Like, we've seen star players. We saw Derrick Rose suck in summer league. We saw Steph Curry suck in summer league. We saw Trae Young last year suck in summer league. Just because the guy struggles in summer league doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be awful in the NBA. Just because the guy's great in summer league doesn't mean he's going to be great in the NBA. But it's always good fun to see these guys get out there and play. Yeah, besides that, like, I don't think the Bulls have too much more to do besides a possible Chris Dunn trade, besides maybe adding another wing. So I think we're going to be entering into the kind of the down part of the year. I'll take a little break. It's always kind of nice after the crazy free agency season. So I guess we'll see. And then we'll, in the next couple months, we'll get ramped up again.
Yeah, I think that finally NBA news is going to die down a little bit, but who knows, man, we might even have one more big trade around the league at some point before the season starts.
Maybe Kevin Love. Yeah, maybe Kevin Love will get traded. I don't know. I feel like he's been a lot of trade talks. But yeah. I think that's good. As always, shout out to Blue Wire, Blue Wire Pods. Go follow us on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. Go check out all the other good podcasts around Blue Wire. We've been adding a ton of good pods. There's a ton of good NBA pods out there. Please, for us, cash considerations, go rate and review us. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and all that good stuff. So from Jason and Ricky, have a good one, guys, and we'll see if anything else crazy happens in these next few weeks.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.